I think at the end, the emotional side, which can be part trend, but it can be just part of a good color harmony and a good color match from one material to the other, makes it then a requirement on having the technical on the back.
Hello everyone, how are you? Welcome back to our podcast Partners in Time, the podcast where we explore the world around IWC, its watches and partnerships, and we are now in the middle of our Colors of Top Gun launch. Just been to Watches and Wonders, launched a beautiful collection of colored ceramic zirconium oxide pieces in the Pilot's Top Gun collection. And of course, in that context, we had a very, very important partnership. And that was our partnership with the global reference of color design research benchmarking, which is Pantone. And I'm absolutely thrilled and excited to have with me today Carola Seibold from Pantone. You have a job title that's probably longer than what fits into the frame of this podcast, but you're the global tea leader of the tea key account management for Pantone, something like that. But Carola, a very warm welcome to IWC. How are you?
Thank you very much for having me today. So I'm super well. I have a sunny trip to Schaffhausen, which is great. And I really admire your building. I think it's done in such an aesthetic, cool way, also with the color combination. I find a lot of beige and gray shades, which I like a lot. Mm. And I think this is already worth to come here. And of course, to have, of course, today, the talk with you.
Well, thank you. Well, this is normally the point where I would ask you, whereabouts in the world are you? But you've given it away. You're actually here with me inside the podcast box. It's an absolute joy because we've done most of these, obviously, on Zoom or Teams or anything else like that over the last couple of years. So it's very, very special to actually have a face-to-face conversation. And I hope that you, our dear listeners, are going to enjoy our talk today. So, Carola, first things first, we always have to do a wrist check. What are you wearing on your wrist today and why?
So the story is that my husband is a big IWC lover. We have a big IWC watch in our kitchen, which is really huge. And he also have collected watches over a long time. Yeah. Now he flipped to whiskies, unfortunately. Yeah. But still, he was a big watch fan. And when we celebrate our 10th wedding anniversary, he want to buy me a nice watch because I don't wear too much jewelry, as you can see. But I also like to have something which remind me to a good time and something nice on my wrist. So, and he would like to buy me an IWC watch, but at that time, the thing was that the ladies' watches are a little bit more, let's say, classical styled, and the man's was a little bit big for, I have a very small wrist here. So therefore, unfortunately, we have gone for another watch brand, which is not his preferred one, not my preferred one. I will not show it to you now.
It's a very interesting color in the dial, huh?
Yeah. And
you're only giving me sort of half a glimpse here, but it's a very style.
But nevertheless, just to let you know, his first choice would be to buy me an IWC and then based on this.
Thank you. It's good to know that obviously we will be covering that segment of the market very soon.
Yeah.
And it's also part of the journey we're working on together. So I'm very, maybe we'll see each other again in a year's time or year and a half.
Yeah, and I have the 25th wedding anniversary soon. So maybe then it's a good occasion.
25th wedding anniversary?
No, not yet. Not yet. I said soon, but we need to develop the project. So, and you know, we need some time to develop it together.
Congratulations on
it's just 20 this year, but it's already.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
already something you have to
year number 14, 13, 14. Oh, God, that's probably the moment my wife will shoot
me. Yeah, exactly. You should know that.
I should know that. Something like that. 14th, actually. Yeah. I just did a quick calculation. Now, well done for that. But let's talk a little bit about history, because I think I was interested to learn that you have more or less like a full-grown fashion background. I mean, you're an economics degree, but then you went on to really, really work sort of the German and beyond fashion scene. Tell us a little bit about the journey into Pantone and what your passion and background is.
Yeah, so my passion was all the time going into the fashion industry. But, you know, I have a father who's very traditional minded. And he said, no, if you do a study in fashion, you will end up as a taxi driver. Don't do it. So study, please, something meaningful. And so, I had a very strict father. And he's, by the way, living also in Switzerland, and he's still very healthy and very good. So, but now I decided then
not driving a taxi, I hope.
Yeah. And then I decided to go for economics. Mm. But like the Cinderella story, I was working at that time as an intern in one of the luxury department stores groups in Germany. And I was in the men's department. And one of the chief design officers come around and want to buy a jacket. And I helped him, and he asked me, what do you do here? And what do you do for living in future? And I said, oh, I would love to go to the fashion industry. And I said, okay, bring your CV in and you have a job. So I got this job as a chief purchasing officer, which was at that time really like the Cinderella story.
Straight to C-level, boom.
Yeah, it was like, wow, yeah, exactly like that. And it was a time, to be honest, where you not have all the processes we have today.
Yeah.
It was really 25 years ago where you really travel to Hong Kong, to Los Angeles, to New York, you just purchase something. Not just something, you have to have a good taste and a good feeling for also for colors already at that time. But it was not process-driven like we are all working today.
You didn't have to fill in an SAP purchase order form
absolutely
before you could
not.
Speak to somebody.
There was no internet, there was no email, you have telefax at that time. So it was really the old story.
You checked into the Mandarin Oriental and the gentleman or the lady behind the desk said, we have a message for you, and pulled out an envelope,
exactly,
which was like
exactly,
a text message
exactly,
from home.
Yeah,
so you check in when you get to Hong Kong. You're like, oh yeah, today or tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. That was a little bit this world, which was also good world, and it was already driven really also by color importance, because if you do something wrong in color that time already, you could not sell it. So, and this journey starts there, and then I stay there for 10-12 years in the fashion industry, and then I moved to be in the international consulting company for a while, and then I was hired by Pantone, and to be honest, then color really starts. Because I think if you start with Pantone, you understand more the importance of color and the fascinating of color, and it's still my dream job, I have to say. And it's not only because I'm the podcast here today. I say this to every headhunter, to every boss who's starting, you said, don't pull me away. It's still my dream job. And I think because, it's color is have so much varieties from emotional sides to technical sides. And this makes the beauty of the job still.
No, it's a great story. And I relate to that story a lot because I think we both have a little bit of anchoring in that same sort of fashion scene. For me, it was the other way around. My passion was always design, and my first inkling was always fashion design back in the day. You know, I did
okay,
a lot of
so you also have a fashion background then, or no architecture?
Nearly, exactly, but it would have been fashion almost.
Okay.
And basically at the time, I was the other way around because I was concerned that design was not going to be a serious career. So I asked my mum, actually, I said, what is a decent kind of job where you can make a good living and have time for your passions? And I don't know why she said you have to be a pharmacist, because at the time you'd
really
see, these people in Germany that are working decent
and
amount
you have
of
studied
money.
Pharmacy then?
No, neither.
Okay.
I did basically the whole prep to study natural sciences in Cambridge, and went to do the interviews and all the rest of it, and I even worked most of my sort of teenage years on a Saturday in the pharmacy where I came from. It should have been a sign, really, because they put me very quickly onto the window decoration and away from stacking pills and medicines. So that was already a sign. Yeah. And then my teenage girlfriend's dad at the time worked for the, well, was the owner, I think, of the German fashion brand Otto Kern.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Häuser der Mode in Eschborn and all the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, he was actually the one who said to me, because I was always thinking, okay, I'm going to be a pharmacist, and then I use the night shift to actually do more of my design work and stuff, because I love it. And he was like, look, you're being silly, because if that's your dream and that's your passion, follow it, do it. And that's when last minute I sort of ripped my life around, as it were, and just turned it all and actually started to go to Central St. Martin's for the foundation degree and started to look into fashion design. And in the end, I just didn't love the atmosphere in the studios. And that's how I bumped into the interior design studio. And that's how I ended up in interior design. But it would
and
have
now
very
today
nearly...
you're here. But this is really a totally different job now, what you're doing now. Or is it numbers?
If it was numbers, I wouldn't be here. Of course, it's also numbers. But I always think, you know, as I often say, at the end of the day, when you're selling and making an emotional product, first of all, you're a manufacturing company here. So it's very much involved really about the engineering, design, production of product. And secondly, you're making an emotional product. So I think at the end of the day, what our clients first and foremost react to are aesthetics. You know, it's about a brand, it's about a product, it's how it speaks to you. And after that, you start thinking technology and sustainability and making and craftsmanship and performance and all of these things. But primarily, I think luxury brands are an emotional expression, emotional response in people. And that's why I think the decision making that is involved in being in charge of a luxury brand is not far away from actually a designer's job in that sense. But good question. No, it's not just numbers, luckily.
Because I expect in your job you have a lot of for sure you have also a lot of numbers.
We also have a lot of numbers. We also have very clever people who can look after those numbers.
That's a good thing. If you're in that level already, you have the people who prepare the numbers. You only have to read the numbers and interpret it in the right way.
Interpret the numbers the right way. I think that's the key to it.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about Pantone, because I'm just assuming that some of our listeners are not fully familiar with what Pantone is and what Pantone does. Give us a rough overview over Pantone's role.
Okay, Pantone is really a very long-term in the market being company. It's founded in the 1963 already. It was a family-owned company at the beginning, and it was coming alive because the former owner started to think about an international language for print houses because he was struggling in that way. And so Pantone Formula Guide, which is still in the market, which, by the way, I saw today on the table of your design team too, is there, of course, in an updated version. And then step by step, the company grow into other markets because, as you can imagine, the colors for print industry are different needs like color for interior, which I just mentioned, or the fashion industry. So we invented then in the 80s the fashionable material system. And we invented the Pantone Color Institute, which is this part of the company who do all the consultancy parts in color psychology, in trend forecasting. And then step by step, we invented other things. We have, for example, a skin tone guide where you can measure your skin. And this is very important for everybody who do prosthesis or in the cosmetic industry. Yeah. Some people like that. So nowadays, I think Pantone is really the global authority of color. It sounds a little bit arrogant, but I think we are. And all the people love us. We do really a lot of digital thing. This is really coming not through Corona only, but get really pushed through Corona that the world understand we need to go digital. So digital means not only in design, it means also in communication with the supply chain. So this is a big part. So we launched a new app, for example, where you can do digital mood boards, for example, which you still do today manually on a wall. But think about people sitting in hybrid solution for the future. Some people sit at home. They need to exchange it. Also, of course, digitally, all these things with right color values, with right photos. You can scroll over photos, pull out colors, get a Pantone reference tool. So all this digital thing. And then, of course, we have the licensing part. So the good thing is, like you described before, IWC has a very high aesthetic approach to the market. We have it too. And we have a lot of licensee partner for end consumer business, you know, the coffee mugs, socks, hotels, bicycles. And to be honest, I'm sure a lot of end consumers just buy it because they like how the color comes up and how the aesthetic looks like. They maybe even don't know that we normally start with selling color guards in the B2B side. So this one is very important. And then, of course, not to forget the Pantone Color Institute, which is really growing in the last years, especially. And you mentioned this emotional part of luxury brands. And I think, to be honest, in these worlds where we have not only Corona pandemic, we have now Ukraine war, we have a lot of uncertainties coming up, which people get more emotional in every aspect of the world. So we see a need of communicating with brands together, messages through color, because this is the easy way to do emotional messages. So this is what Pantone is doing globally. We have people everywhere in the world, color technical people, but also color creative people. Yeah, and this is mainly what we see our role, helping people in color. It doesn't matter which industry.
That's excellent. And obviously, it's been absolute joy to be collaborating on the colors of Top Gun together. And maybe I'll just tell our listeners a little bit where the background story sits for this collaboration, because when we did the first colored ceramic watch in IWC since 1986, which was the one, the Mojave Desert chronograph we did in 2019. We were really inspired by both the desert landscape of where our colleagues in the US Navy are practicing, but also their flight suits, their harnesses, their technical equipment. And I really saw that there was this whole monochromatic thing going on where everything was kind of sand colored, but there were tons of different materials and textures. And I really wanted to capture that look in a watch. And that was really the idea behind the Mojave Desert. But then when we started making this watch, we realized how complicated it was for us to color match all those different materials and components to the same standard. There's a dial printing process involved that is on a metal base that has different processes of applying colors and ultimately printing. There is a superluminova involved, which is a hand-applied luminous material which needs to be applied to the hands and indexes and so on. Then you have the FKM rubber in the base material of the strap. You have a textile, you have stitching thread, you have colored ceramics case, and all those things you want to be the same perfect monochromatic look in the end, and then finding out that all these different manufacturing technologies work to very, very different color standards, or not, sometimes as the case may be. So it becomes a highly iterative and highly manual process to actually find the perfect color match. And that's when we realized, okay, if we expand this idea of colored ceramics at IWC, we have to find a better way to aligning color matching from these different processes, and in come Pantone. And then tell us a little bit about your motivation for this collaboration and how it came about, and how we work together.
Yeah, I think the motivation really comes from, and maybe I need to go one step back. As you can imagine, we get a lot of inquiries weekly where people ask us, can we do a collaboration together, especially if it should go out into press and social media and something like that. And not all the projects we say yes to, because it has to fit also to our DNA of the brand. Because I think Pantone at the end is not a marketing agency. It's its own brand for color. And we only want to do project which we see a meaningful result coming up. So I think if we see our two companies, I think we have on one side both a very high focus on quality, which is on your side and which is also on our side. If you deliver something in the color standards, which you just described, the challenges, but we deliver color standards, then we have a high quality aspect on these color standards. And I think you have the same in watches. And then if you see also the market approach from the marketing side, I think both our companies are very pure, straight, no flourishing around that. And I think therefore we saw a natural fit to come together, and we was convinced from the very beginning, and also I can speak here on behalf of our vice president, Laurie Pressman, that we was convinced from the beginning that this fit will work perfectly together. So, and this was really the motivation to say, let's go together and let's build up on the things you have already in your mind, and to really figure out what is in your mind, what is on your mood boards, and how we can really reference this to a Pantone color to make it then with all the emotional thing behind that and all the technical things also behind that. So I think that was a little bit what we said. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And I think the result is hopefully there, as we can see. So I think at least we saw a very big response on everything we post. So yeah, it pays out at the end.
Yeah, it's true. And for us, it was really, you know, being the engineer in fine watchmaking, we always look for that technical engineering approach to things. You know, we are always a problem-solving watch company that is making technical, functional things that fulfill a purpose, that are robust, that are easy to use, but at the same time, conceptually and technically ingenious. And I think when my team came to me first time and said, look, actually going into these colored ceramics, what we should be doing is really basing this on the Pantone collaboration, also in terms of its campaign, I knew immediately that was the right way to go, because it has that technical precision, that engineering. It's not just color for just the fascination of color's sake. There is accuracy in that that I really thought resonated with our brand. And describe to us a little bit, obviously, especially you being so familiar with the world of fashion, how do these two worlds interact? On the one hand, the very, very technically precise world of color engineering. You say you probably have a huge backbone of technicians, color engineers, people who make this all happen. And on the other hand, that feeling side of things, which is probably not technical at all, to really feel out what the color trends are, the developments are, and how do we get to the next it color?
Yeah, I think how it fits together is really a discussion I have very often with my husband, to be honest, because he said, why is it so important that colors are accurate? Because he is just the emotional buyer. Doesn't matter if it's fashion or anything else. He buys because he likes something or he dislikes something, then he don't buy it. So, but the thing is really what we should understand, we only like something if we have a good feeling with it. And a good feeling can come up either if we like a color harmony, or we think it's the right aesthetic for a trend, which we saw everywhere around us. Or we think, especially in a luxury brand, we see it that you have to have your core colors accurately. Because if this is not the case, people think there's something wrong. It's by the subconsciousness. It's not we think something is wrong, but we can see something which we don't think it's fitting well. And then we think it's not really this valuable brand anymore. So I think at the end, the emotional side, which can be part trend, but it can be just part of a good color harmony and a good color match from one material to the other, makes it then requirement on having the technical on the back. Because without the technical aspect on the back, you will never have a good, let's say, color match in all the different colors, and people don't feel well and emotion is not there.
How is a major trend color born? Where does that really happen? Is it really, is it in runway shows in fashion where that first pops up? Who are the first people in the chain
who do color trends?
Who actually set the trends? Where does it typically happen?
Let's say that I maybe can explain it a little bit in color of the year, what we do every year, because even if we consider color of the year not a trend color, to be honest, we call it a zeitgeist color. But how this comes up is real that we have an expert team who really combed the world. So it's not like a crystal ball. Somebody's looking in and said, I can see that and that. So you really need to see what's going on in our world. Political thing, economical things, all the things with sustainability, for example, have a big impact. All the things which are about metaverse and all the digital world have a super big impact. Then influencers, then other celebrate VIP people who wear something. New materials have a big impact on trends. So all these melting together, let's say that, with the people who have the expert knowledge, like you describe with the numbers, somebody prepare the numbers, but you have to read it in the right way. Somebody prepare the information, but somebody have to pull out the right information from this first line information and then select the color trends. So all these factors, it could be big sports events, for example, in the year where the Olympics was in London, we saw also that some colors which are more on the sports sides come up. So, and all these things are big film movies sometimes, like Avatar, for example, where you see a lot of blue colors. So all these things influence trends at the end. So, and we discussed it at lunch, Christian and me, about is there really a global trend? Or could there be different trend forecasting companies do different things? And I have done a lot of speeches together with other trend forecasting people. And of course, before we go on stage, we align and check if we do it in the same way and that we give controversial information to the audience. And very often, even if they have done their job independent from us, of course, from our trend forecasting team, we end up at the end with the same, let's say, core themes. And this is really influenced by macro trends, and then you go down. So by I would say, by different levels.
Somebody must start all of this who's not looking at other trends, because somebody must start somewhere.
Yeah, you're right. And it's not like, of course, you have a lot of trends, a lot of trends born very late, let's say that. I talk about this iconic pink color, which we have done. This was a trend was started in the luxury industry and now copied multiple times by the fast fashion markets around the world. So this is easy to see a trend coming from this top level going to all the others. But the other trends really, and you see that, for example, think about two topics, sustainability and metaverse. Metaverse, digital world, everything is bluish, lilac. It's a different kind of colors which you see on your screen, and especially in this metaverse surrounding. In comparison to sustainability, where a lot of colors can be not achieved because some sustainable materials don't transport these colors or the pigments are not available. So this is a total different color story which comes up from this corner. So at the end, these are just two things which we have in our latest trend report for spring summer 23, that we see these two major influences coming in and have to be expressed in color palettes at the end. And if I would have my laptop with you, I could show you that you see really these two directions. And then we develop within these macro trends some, trend palettes.
In our industry, it's a lot longer cycle. Our products are designed to last forever. So in a sense, what we always have to be very cautious of is making things in colors that have a very short relevance in terms of its time. And what I observed in the 15, 16 years here at IWC is when I joined this company, you know, watch faces were silver, they were mainly black. And there were first blue watch faces coming, but this was quite niche. It was very niche to go for colored face in a watch. And then we saw that blue trend really building massively over a period of 6, 7, 8 years. Before then, blue, I remember it would have been around 2014, 15, thereabouts, when blue really became a breakthrough color. And suddenly we saw that in sports watches, it really was the most popular dial color for a wide range of our customers. And then a couple of years later, and this is why I also asked the trend question, green came in. Again, some cautious attempts at first, very successful. And then green started building to the point that I think it was last year or 2 years ago, All of the press commented. It was a digital edition of Watches and Wonders, and all the press commented, what happened here? Did all the CEOs of the watch industry get together and decide it's going to be green this year? And I mean, the simple matter of the fact, I can give this much away, is we didn't know, no such lunch took place where we agreed on a color, but you could see everybody more or less had the same color feel and color idea at the same time, which must have been triggered by something. And then the interesting thing is that green really took off a lot quicker in terms of large appeal than blue did. So what still took like years to build with blue happened in 1.5 years with green, to the point where green is now really the second most popular color in watches.
Okay, interesting.
And that is just something I observe, where it's it's long range color trends, but the popularity increase when it works seems to be quicker now than it used to. And then, as you said, talking about emotion and joy, and we've really seen that as a consequence, I think, of the world around us. From last year, really post-pandemic, there was this really, really big resurgence of the lust for life, of joy, of celebration, of things being more joyous, more colorful. You saw it this year at Watches and Wonders, one of the key trends as well, things being inspired again by nature and flora and fauna and getting out and about. And there's a more of a celebratory feel in colors. Do you see this in other industries as well, or is that specific to us?
What we can see, because you said colors are picking up more easier or more quicker, is the fact that if you think the car industry, and think about back 10, 15 years ago in the car industry, there was white black, gray, navy, maybe red. But
gray.
Yeah, and gray. Yeah, and grays. And silver, of course. Don't forget silver. But now, today, you get baby blue, you get retro green, you get whatever. Not only in the, let's say, low-budget cars like a Fiat Cinquecento, but even also in a Porsche or something like that. So I think, and this is what we also discussed with your design team before, I think the world is more open also for things which are very, not very expensive and negative, say, but you have to invest some budget, a car, for example, and you not change it every 2 years because it's not possible. Yeah, sometimes, okay, but let's say the normal.
2 years?
Okay, no, but you have it a longer term. And so, and I think at the end, this is something where people seem to be more open to also take colors on board for things they want to use longer. And this is the same with a watch. So I think people are more open to this colorful world and go away a little bit from this traditional thinking, okay, I need to buy a silver watch, because this is then last forever and I like it all the time. So I think the time is really right to play with colors. And we, as I said, we saw it in the car industry, we saw it in furniture. Can you imagine to have all these furniture colors which are coming from the retro styling now? That was not possible. Our grandmothers and grandfathers have leather brown, leather black sofa, and that was it. And now you have a baby pink, velvet sofa and retro styling.
I think there is a cyclical thing of people changing their mind about what their longer term investments should be color wise that also happens, because again, think back 5 to 10 years ago in the car industry, the majority of cars on the road were white, and that's almost completely disappeared. Like if you now look at lorries full of new cars, a very small amount of these cars are white.
Yeah,
you know, they're
correct.
All gray now these days, or you know, black at a push. But that white thing, you know, for some time, first it was like just something you saw in Dubai, white cars.
yeah, because of the heat. And then it gets very popular.
Everyone right now thought, ooh, why is this car white? And I remember my very first car, Toyota 4x4, was white. And at that time, 1997, that definitely wasn't the trend color in cars. Definitely not. But then, you know, a few years in, every single car was white, or most cars were white on the road. And now that's gone completely away again. There's no real reason for that. I mean, white still looks the same as it did 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Probably will. But there is this kind of cyclical wave effect happening as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And this, you see what we do when we do our trend forecasting. You can also see, and part of our trend forecasting is to see where colors are moving. That means we know that every season you will have a green, a red, and a blue, and a yellow. It's not that any color disappear totally, or brown or beige, but in which kind the red is moving. Is it more towards the cool or the orange one? So, and there is, of course, a tendency you can see year over year, and you can see it also over the year. And there's also a logical thing. You mentioned the green before, and we saw in the years when the first time all this healthy food came up, that people adapt more green. So there are some circles and some influences which have nothing to do with the industry you're sitting in, where people think about suddenly more green. And now with all the sustainability thing, people think about more earth colors, because this is a logical consequence, thinking about sustainability, to having this color in your mind. So all these have, of course, waves and coming back also again. And also these retro trends, like I mentioned via Cinquecento, these retro trends, they take really the colors from that times, but they modify it.
And I think that's where the pastel colors come
in. But if you would compare it, and we have done a project with Pink Panther, you know this character?
Yes.
And Pink Panther was founded in the 60s. And in the 60s, we have a lot of different technology. We don't have flat screens. We don't have tablets, nothing like that. Pink Panther has a specific pink color.
Mm-hmm.
And they approached us some years ago and said, can you make the color more contemporary? And we just move it a little bit. So you will not recognize it if you switch on your television. But if you see it side by side, you say, oh, wow, the old Pink Panther looks really a little bit old and dirty. And the one.
So was that bluer, the old pink? And is it now redder?
No, it's bluer. It's a little bit bluer. Right. Yeah, the other one was a little bit more, also
pinky
not so.
Pink.
Yeah, it was a little bit dirty more and a little bit more beige pink. And now it's a little bit more bluish pink. So, and these small shifts we do for a lot of companies, meanwhile, because especially traditional companies see the need to get their color logo a little bit more contemporary. And this is just a small thing. But this makes the difference between something looking traditional or something looking modern.
Wow. Panther and Pink Panther. Who would have thought?
Yeah, we have Pink Panther. A lot of characters.
For the benefit of our listeners, explain a little bit, how do you technically describe a color? Because, of course, we all know the little swatch books, and you can sort of, you know, try and visually color match. Mm-hmm. Always depends on the light. The light is mostly horrible. And, you know, we've seen often, that's why I like the interior design bit, because obviously in spaces you can calibrate the end effect of colors really effectively with light. But often that's also your worst enemy, because if you're trying to show a product and you have different environments, different daylight and artificial light, it's all over the shop. How do you precisely and technically capture a color value? How is it actually done? How do you define a color?
So what we do is we have two ways. One is still the visual way, which you need on the one side, make clear that you have the good eye vision. So we have also color tests where you can test your colors. Do you know how many people are colorblind partially?
A lot, probably, including me.
No, 8% of men. So this is and only 0.4% of women. But if you see the quality control people around all my big customers, mostly men, but men have more the tendency to be at least partial colorblind. But so that's the first thing, that you really make sure that the people who are looking visually to color can see colors. And then, of course, you have to standardize that color. That means you have to look really into materials. You cannot compare different materials to each other. That's exactly what we also discussed today, that you have really a challenge if you have, in a watch, you have so many different materials, like you described before. And I was really impressed how good it was already now with especially Mojave Desert, which is really complicated color.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
Yeah, because beige is in the gamut where we as a human being can see the most differences. So for us, it would be easy to see if something is wrong. So it was already in a level that, wow, I know how complicated it is. And so, but therefore it is good all time, or more easy, of course, for everybody, if they have for the stripes, somebody who give you a sample in maybe it's polyester, nylon or cotton or whatever it is. You have the ceramic and you get a sample, a color standard in the ceramic material. You get it for print. So you have compare at the end your little parts of the watch with the right standard.
Mm.
So that's one technical thing. And the other one is the big thing of digital data. So what I learned today is you're measuring colors. That's great. So this is already really a very good step forward, because measuring color means you make a double check. You check it first digitally and don't rely on a subjectivity of a single person. And then you do last, I would say, the creative check by visual, because a lot of things, and we talk about the leather stripes, leather is a natural material. You have to accept some tolerances. And at the end, somebody, I learned a lot about your leather band stripe.
Dear clients, this was the lady from Pantone telling you have to accept tolerances in leather stripes.
Yeah, exactly. No, and this is really, at the end, everything which is natural, we work a lot for the food industry, for example, and you think every yogurt has this color, and it's done by a marketing person who gives the color into the yogurt. It's not because the strawberry or whatever brings up the color. They're sitting a marketing person. Yeah, watch out if you look tonight. And there sits somebody with a color guide and try to match, this is the right color. Chocolate, the oil which is going into your car, all is colored. Nothing is.
Yeah, no,
yeah. So, and I think at the end, this makes sense because we human beings have an expectation. The same like for your watches, it have to be accurate.
Yes, like antifreeze for your car has to be blue for some reason.
Yeah, you know, yeah, yeah. So, and I think the digital way is really the something where I think this is the future in controlling color and color standards. And because this is objective and this, you have this light influence, which you mentioned before. Of course, every color evaluation have to be done in a light box, not on the window, not on the streets, nowhere. You have to go into a light box and control it because then you can make sure that you meet the expectation of your end consumer who wear it outside, but they buy it in a shop with LED or a fluorescent light. And you have to check this first. And I think these are really the technical things to standardize color. To make it double.
And digitally, how is it done? Because I saw, for example, I had a few months ago, my painter came around and we tried to color match the outside color of our house. And he had a little attachment for his mobile phone.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
And he just put that on the wall and said, there we go. So what does it measure?
Okay, so what your painter has done, you can, in theory, we also have a small single card, looks like a credit card, which has a hole in the middle and has a lot of colorful bubbles. It's a calibration card. At the end, with this calibration card and the mobile phone and with a specific Pantone app, you can really, in theory, measure, let's say, the wall here and get a Pantone code. Still, you should not forget, this is your mobile phone. It's not meant to be measuring colors. It's just...
But it's measuring what? CMYK values? What
is it measuring? They measure at the end... Technically, to be honest, I don't know how they measure. I can explain it for the spectrophotometer, but how the mobile phone, they measure it with the camera. It's at the end not a spectrophotometer. It's the camera took more or less a photo, and this is something which inside the mobile phone will then be transferred into the Pantone system. So they have the Pantone data sit in the system. Other than that, he could not do it. Mm. And your painter probably have the paint app from your paint manufacturer sitting in, so they can measure that. So, but to be honest, I would not trust 100% that the color comes up correctly. You should know, the thing is really, a mobile phone is still a mobile phone. We said it's good for designers to be inspired. If you go to Milano and instead of buying a big designer dress and cut it and send it around the world, take it just for inspiration. But if you want to control a color, you should go with a real spectrophotometer. These are machines who really measure colors in two different geometries. One is a kind of bowl. And what they do is they give a light to a color and they measure the reflection of this light. So color is nothing else than a reflection of light. And they measure this reflection. And based on these reflections, they make a curve. And this curve, called reflectance curve also, this is at the end the DNA of every color. So, and your painter, coming back to your painter, I would maybe let them not paint the full house immediately without checking it, to be honest. Because
you didn't.
No, because it's, and the thing is really, we need to understand that the spectrophotometer has its own price. I don't want to talk about prices here, but your mobile phone is your mobile phone. Mm. It's a nice gadget to catch a color a little bit, but not in a highly professional way, to be honest.
Yeah, that's true. But nevertheless, I was very, very impressed with what the team did this year at Watches and Wonders in terms of, you know, in the early days, it always struck me like you created physical events for a physical experience for people to come there. And your hope was that all the people that would come, you know, they have a great time and they tell their friends about it. And actually, when you go back, which is also to do with the development of Google image search and all the rest of it, but probably prior to 2006-07, there's already very, very little image information available about IWC's exhibitions and stuff from those years. And then before that, it basically completely stops. And really only, I would say, it's been 2012-13 onwards when you really have a broad digital representation online of sort of what brands were up to.
Yeah, this is really the future. And I think in all these digital things, especially with color, there will be a big change. And I think within a few years, we maybe don't have any physical things anymore because then we can rely 100%. Yeah, this will be hard for design orientated people, I know.
So hard for watch companies.
yeah, this will be, but you know, a watch company will be still something. I think a watch is something different. It's something which, like you said, it's emotional. You don't buy it because you just want to read the time.
No,
you buy it because
we've been disrupted back in the 80s in the quartz crisis. So
we've
had that quite early on. So
No, I think this will be forever. But I think in our business where we have still a lot of physical things.
Yeah.
And you saw already, I still started my career where the designers have been painting with our Pantone markers on the desk.
Copic markers, yeah.
Yeah, and now they do everything on the computer because they have 3D design animated programs, and they do everything there, and nobody questioning that. And this will be coming with color soon, too. So we work on that heavily, and we know this is the future.
Now, we've launched the first five colors together, which was obviously our jet black, our Ceratanium, our Lake Tahoe, our IWC Woodland, and the IWC Mojave Desert. Of course, you've seen stuff around the design center here in Christian, I'm sure, so ignore all of that for a minute. But if it were up to you, what's the next colored ceramic we should launch? In Carola's world? What's missing?
In my world, what was the next color for ceramic?
Mm.
I would go... And I cannot specify the color for you, but I would go for a color which is totally unexpected. And I think for me, when I see all the projects I have done the last years, the most successful one was the unexpected ones, either from the messaging or from the color itself. And I think this is the only thing I can, and I said this today also to Christian, think about something which is unexpected. Because what you want to achieve as a brand, like in your luxury industry, you need to have the attention of the people say, oh, wow, I have never expected that IWC is doing that. Of course, in a positive way.
And that's how a trend is being set. Right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah. And therefore, I'm sure that, of course, with our help, with our expert help, not with my help, but there are ways to find this unexpected thing. And with the right message behind it, because again, the emotion is so important under every behind every color. So therefore, I can.
Yeah, and I think you're really describing well one of the basic natures of all of the emotional luxury products. Is on the one hand, it's the physicality of the product, and it's also the story. I think that's what you're saying with color and messaging.
Yeah.
It's always what it means as well.
Yes.
It's never, and that's again when you going back to full circle to this question of University Blue. Of course, there is a meaning behind that. There's a story behind that. There's a legacy behind that that translates into a color, but always resonates with the color as well. And on that bombshell, Carola, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
Thank you.
It's an absolute joy talking to you. And I'm really excited about our collaboration and what lies ahead in all of the color ventures and research we can do together. And of course, for our listeners to stay tuned and see what the next IWC and Pantone colorway in colored ceramics is going to be. Thank you very much, Carola.
Thank you very much for having me here. And it was very nice to talk to you.
So, ladies and gentlemen, thanks a lot for listening. This was it, another episode of Partners in Time. We'll be back very, very shortly with another exciting chat. In the meantime, stay tuned, download the app, stay tuned to our social media channels. Talk to you soon. Thank you. Bye now.